A listener exclusive.
Hello, I'm Danny Minogue, and in this episode, I'm so excited to explore the celebrity icons of the 90s, and oh, there were some great ones. I'm going to be sharing some of my own stories about meeting big stars during that decade, including naming and shaming the household name who tipped a tray of drinks on me. We'll also hear from some famous friends and true 90s icons about what life was like for them. Plus, hear your best stories. And trust me, we're in for a wild ride. My email inbox blew up over this topic. Even I have been impressed with the length some of you went to in order to meet your 90s faves in the flesh. So if you've come with me on this journey of the 90s in this podcast, you'll know that I've explored all kinds of musical artists and pop culture references from the decade, from grunge to rave, Friends to Four Weddings. And there's one common theme when we look back, and that's how it was a different time, a more innocent, more low-tech era. Back then, there was no YouTube or internet and barely any mobiles. If you saw a star in real life, you had to hope you had a camera on you and then race to the store to have the film developed, praying no one was blinking. When your favourite musical artist dropped their new video clip, it was a real event. You'd have to crowd around the telly on a Saturday morning waiting for Video Hits or Rage to play it. Things weren't just available on demand to watch online whenever you liked. And because there was no social media, there was this air of mystery around celebrities. We didn't know what artists were up to between albums or tours or movies. We'd only see them when they were in promo mode doing interviews for TV, radio, and magazines. Sometimes that's how you'd discover an artist. Who's this new girl on the cover of Smash Hits or Dolly magazine? Oh, it's Britney Spears. It was a decade that saw the rise of some major superstars. And before TikTok, if you wanted people to hear your song, you had all manner of TV shows you could perform on. And the more devoted fans would often wait outside a TV studio or radio station because they knew their heroes were inside. And if the stars went in, the stars had to come out. And let me say, waiting outside 88 Saturday seems to be a common theme with you guys back in the 90s. Like I said, it was a more innocent time. So in a pre-9/11 world when security wasn't so intense, fans would use inside knowledge or clever guesses to work out when an artist was flying in. And at the airport, you could go right up to the gate and grab an autograph as they walked off the plane. Sometimes those groups of fans gathering to get a glimpse of pop stars got so worked up they might have had a case of mistaken identity. And here's an example of that when I checked in with my mate Peter Andre, a man who topped the charts here and in the UK in the 90s, who has this great story involving screaming girls in Germany at the start of his career.
The weirdest fan encounter I ever had was when I turned up in Germany one time and I had my cap on. You know, I had those curtains that used to come down from my cap. And I remember these people screaming when I turned up in this van. You know, they were overly doing it. And I'm thinking, I didn't know I was that known in Germany, right? I'm getting out and they're screaming and they're calling me a name. They're calling me Kevin. They're going, Kevin, we love you, Kevin, screaming, all sorts of things. Anyway, I went in the room and I'm like, who's Kevin, right? Anyway, it just so happened that a few minutes later, I heard all the screams all over again. I could hear them calling out Kevin amongst other names. And I heard Nick, and it was the Backstreet Boys. Backstreet's back, all right. I could hear the confusion because people had thought I was Kevin from the Backstreet Boys. I have no idea. And we were both wearing a cap and we were both in puffer jackets. And,
oh, my goodness.
You know, it was hilarious. But, of course, I just went with it. And I think some of Backstreet Boys fans were very confused that Kevin sort of appeared on his own, then appeared with the Backstreet Boys. And, of course, he didn't.
Oh, my God. I love how you just went with it. That's great, Peter. I love that story. And the reference to the hair, that style of curtains, it was a real thing with boy bands and male pop stars in the 90s. I mean, everyone from David Beckham to Mark Owen of Take That and Nick Carter from Backstreet Boys had those hair curtains that required a dramatic centre part and lashings of hair product, let me tell you. Speaking of Take That, I remember the first time I ever saw them, which was way before they became the biggest boy band in the land. I was at the BBC in London doing Top of the Pops or some show like that, and someone told me there was a new boy band and they were down the corridor doing a photo shoot, and if I wanted to go and meet them because they were wearing the craziest outfits. And I remember thinking, Take That, it's such a strange name for a pop band. I don't think this is ever going to catch on. Yeah, good one, Danny. In this photo shoot happening down the hall, I was told they were topless and they had red cod pieces over their jeans. And I thought, yeah, I gotta see this. So when I stuck my head in the room, they shouted, Danny Minogue. And out of the five of them, Robbie Williams was the one who, you know, had to make himself known. He was totally peacocking and jumping in front of the other guys. He was energetic. He was cheeky. Reminded me of like Jerry from the Spice Girls. He just automatically grabbed my attention. And I wasn't the only one charmed by Take That. Listen to Tony's story about meeting them.
I spent the 90s chasing Take That's concert tours all over the world. I went to meet and greets and press conferences and signings wherever I could get to see them. Man, it was so much fun. Me and my friends would wait outside hotels for hours on end just to see them and say hello. And they were always into it. They were always up for a chat. They would happily stop and sign and get photos. During their first promo tour in 1994, we had friends from Smash Hits magazine who secretly gave us Take That's Aussie itinerary. So we knew where they were going to be before they did. They'd turn up for a photo shoot and we'd be like, surprise! And they'd be like, how did you get here first? And we'd be laughing and saying, oh, we just know. My favourite is Gary. Gary has always been my favourite and he always will be. People forget that back in the 90s, Gary was the chubby, less popular one, but not for me. Girls would do a beeline for Michael Robbie and I would walk straight up to Gary and I'd just chat to him. He's the nicest man in pop music. Everybody knows that. One time during the Nobody Else concert tour, a few of us were killing time at the bar playing Who Am I? Gary saw us and he came over and he asked if he could join in. We were like, hell yeah. And he even won a few games. And we offered to shout him a winning round of drinks, but he politely refused. And then he went and bought all of us a round of drinks instead.
Oh, that is incredible, Tony. I just, like, travelling around the world to so many different places. That is dedication. Take That and I ended up crossing paths all the time. We were on the same TV programs or awards shows. And of course, if we're talking about Take That, we must give equal time to their boy band rivals, East 17. And the fans were rivals too. But the ones who loved East 17 were just as sneaky.
Hi, Danny. I'm Angie from Perth. And I was a mad East 17 fan back in the day. When they came to Aberdeen, Scotland in the 90s for a tour, we went to the hotel they were staying in to try and see them, and we ended up meeting them at the Servo across the road whilst they were buying their Sunday morning papers. We met them all, Tony, Brian, John and Terry, and they were all so nice and gave us hugs and we got photos with them. They made us feel, all right, all right. We couldn't wait to tell everyone at school the next day.
That is so good, Angie. I love that story and your accent and your singing. Thank you. And of course, Robbie Williams set the blueprint for leaving a boy band and getting solo success. And I remember being in Germany doing a TV show at the same time Robbie was there on tour. And we were staying in the same hotel and we were all going to meet up in the bar later with our bands and crew and dancers. And there was a waitress carrying this huge tray of drinks. I'm going to say there were about 15 glasses on it. And Robbie knocked this tray all over me. Just me. Nobody else. Not a drop hit anyone else. I was literally drenched from head to toe. And this was one of the fanciest hotels I had ever been in. So then I had to walk from that bar through the foyer, down the corridor, and back to my room, absolutely dripping wet the whole way. I was so annoyed. Now, one of the perks of the job is occasionally you get to meet not just musical royalty, but actual royalty. After doing one of the Royal Variety shows, all the performers in the show get to meet whoever the royal is at that show that night. And that night it happened to be Diana. And this was when she was just starting to do a couple of these things on her own. And she was really green to the whole experience. She's young and beautiful. And because she was like dressing for the part of stepping into this royal role, she was wearing this super frumpy old outfit. And I thought, oh my God, that's what I would expect the Queen to be wearing, not Diana. So this is before she found her fashion mojo, but she was still incredible. I'll never forget that moment. Coming up, Natalie Imbruglia shares her weirdest fan encounter. Plus, I tell you which superstar hunk knocked on my hotel room very, very late at night. Back in the 90s, a very early version of manifestation was already underway when it came to dating famous people. Soon after finding fame as a Spice Girl, Victoria Adams revealed her celebrity crush was David Beckham, who was already a sports superstar. She met David in the Man United Players Lounge in 97, and he'd already told his teammates he had his own crush on her after seeing her in that PVC suit in the Say You'll Be There video, but he was too shy to make contact. But after that first meeting, it was game on for Posh and Bex, and they're still together, still married, and have built an empire and a family with four gorgeous kids. And while it seems like it's taken from the script of a cheesy Hollywood movie, there's a few cases of fans marrying 90s musicians they've met at concerts. Billy Joe Armstrong of Green Day met his wife Ariane at one of the band's concerts in Minneapolis in 1990, just a few years before becoming global rock stars. They married in 1994 and have two sons who both followed their dad into music. And get this, all three Hanson brothers met their wives at Hanson concerts. Indeed, Zach and Taylor Hanson both met their future wives at the same concert in Atlanta. Lucky night for the family. And at last count, the three brothers have 15 kids between them. Well, Hanson sure know where the love is with that massive extended band family. Well done, boys. Now, Australian chart topper Flume was just a kid when he had an encounter with a 90s star. If you're a pop fan of a certain age, you'll remember the Rumba concerts, which were these massive music showcases that had some of our 90s favourites like Bon Jovi, Natalie Imbruglia, Madison Avenue, Tina Arena, and two big names that Flume met.
I met Shaggy. Wasn't me. We got to meet the man, the legend, and got his autograph. I had it up on my wall in my bedroom for the next, like, 10 years. We got to meet Shaggy, but we also, actually more importantly, we got to meet DJ Sammy. Baby, you're all that I want. I mean, it's kind of a cover, but so DJ Sammy and Shaggy.
Oh, my God. Three names I never thought I'd hear in the same sentence. Oh, a little baby Flume. Now, in the 90s, I was living in London and I was lucky enough to have some pretty cool celebrities for neighbours. When I first relocated to the UK, just after I'd finished up on Home and Away, I was promoting my first album. I only thought I was going to be there for like 3 weeks. I only had one suitcase packed and I ended up living out of a hotel for 2 years because I just kept thinking, yeah, I'll be home at any second. Anyway, there was this little hotel that I stayed at in Notting Hill called the Pembridge Court Hotel, and the people who ran it knew their customers really well, and they knew that people like me in the music biz would be coming and going at odd hours because of the crazy travel schedules. I remember one night I came back to my room and there was a knock at the door, and it was late, which was weird because the staff downstairs would normally just ring up to the room if there were any parcels or anything. So I opened the door and there is Lenny Kravitz going, like, in the coolest voice, oh, hey, I guess this is not my room. To which I said, no, it's not your room. I think you're in the one next door. Whoopsie. Yeah, but, like, you know, I guess not the worst thing that can happen, right? One of my favourite stories that came in for this episode involves Ginger Spice. Back in the 90s, radio stations loved to do competitions where you could meet your favourite star, but some took it up a notch and would fly winners from Australia across the world. I'll let Mark take up this story from here.
Hi Danny, this is Mark from Melbourne, and back in 1999, I won a radio competition to fly to London and meet Jerry Halliwell. Entries were by fax, and when they called me at work to say I'd won, I couldn't believe it. So 2 weeks in London, and the big day happened at Top of the Pop Studios before Jerry performed. We were waiting in the corridor, seeing Enrique Iglesias walk past us, and then ushered into her change room where she was getting ready for the show. She was so kind and inquisitive about my friend and I, especially when we told her we met when working at the Suzanne Corporation. Her hairdresser from New Zealand started singing to her the This Goes Without It Suzanne jingle, which was hysterical. I'd made t-shirts of her logo, which impressed her, and she was confused as to why I was then working at a law firm instead of in a creative field. It was surreal. It was one of the most unforgettable experiences of my life.
That is the best story. What a competition to win! Top of the Pops was incredible, and that corridor that led down to everyone's dressing rooms was just wild. You'd bump into the biggest stars ever. Meeting celebrities most often took place after concerts, backstage, you know, where there's a lot of downtime. And I got a brilliant story about a lucky fan who got to meet one of my absolute faves, Janet Jackson, by being in the right place at just the right time.
Hey Danny, it's Owen from Melbourne here, and you'll be so jealous of this. My friend Elena and I were so lucky to be invited into Janet's dressing room before her performance on Hey Hey It's Saturday. Elena was so thrilled she burst into tears as soon as we entered the room. There stood Janet dressed just like she was in the Her Together Again music video clip with a beaming smile. Janet saw how emotional Elena was and went straight to hug and console her. Janet said, "Oh honey, there's no need to cry, I'm just like you," to which Elena cried back, "But you're a Jackson." It was a truly beautiful moment. Janet was so warm and kind and gave the biggest hugs for such a tiny lady. She posed for photos, signed autographs, and was so thankful for our support and made us feel so incredibly special. I thought being sunburnt would ruin the photo with Janet. However, I ended up with a great shot because I didn't realise I had black and white film in the camera. Thankfully, that Jackson magic was shining down on me that day.
Oh, that is the best. I was about to say, yeah, if you ever like don't like the colour in a photo, just turn it into black and white and it works a treat. Owen, I am jealous of that story. It gives me tingles. But sometimes backstage areas have to be approached with a bit of caution. In the 90s, Oasis not only dominated the charts, they dominated the newspaper headlines by being outrageously outspoken. Noel Gallagher was the main culprit. He would say the most horrible things about other musicians or celebrities, and the papers would lap it up. I'd never met him. I wasn't battling his kind of music in the charts, but somehow I got on his radar and he said some horrible things about me, still does. I'm not one to make enemies with, you know, people in the music biz, but it made me so self-conscious when I go to Top of the Pops. I was worried about running into him in the corridor, so I always used to check the rundown of who was performing on that show just in case. Oasis also said some rotten things about Michael Hutchence, and I remember working on the British morning TV show called The Big Breakfast when that infamous interview between Michael and Paula Yates happened. Paula would interview people on a bed. It was all filmed in this big house. And even though it was a TV set, when she and Michael did that famous interview, woo-wee, it was electric. They were flirting so wildly and they'd just met. I will never forget the energy in that room. And from that moment, Paula left her husband, Bob Geldof, and started going out with Michael. Speaking of big names, I got to see some superstar behaviour up close in the 90s, let me tell you. I remember when Mark Wahlberg was a rapper known as Marky Mark, and I was on the same bill as him at a big concert in the early 90s. I was walking towards the stage and I remember thinking, why is there gym equipment everywhere? And someone told me, Marky Mark refuses to go on unless there's specific exercise equipment backstage so he can pump up before he does his signature T-shirt rip to expose those abs. Yes, you remember it. I thought this was hilarious. It was that American bravado of, I want everyone to know I am the biggest star here.
Come on, swing.
And while you hear those diva stories, there's one I can actually vouch for. I was at Top of the Pops and I was told Jennifer Lopez was on her way, but she refused to perform unless her backstage room was redecorated. I was told specifically everything had to be white, including the sofa. It was a whole thing. I actually asked if I could go in and see the room because she wasn't there at that moment. And, you know, we all hear these stories like, does Mariah Carey really need kittens in her backstage dressing room? You never know which ones are real, but I was lapping up every detail in this conversation. And all that was going through my head was, girlfriend is covered head to toe in body makeup. How do you sit on a white couch? Now, someone I saw many times back in the 90s at Top of the Pops was my gorgeous friend Natalie Imbruglia, and she is no stranger to fan encounters. So here's Natalie with one of her favourite fan stories.
I remember after a show, this fan coming up to me with the most beautiful painting of my dog, Mr. Wilson. So it's beautiful. It's still on my mantelpiece, but I'm not quite sure whether they were a fan of me or my dog. Go figure.
Yeah, sometimes we're pretty lucky to get these amazing creative gifts from fans. And you can see the thought and the effort that went into that one. And I love that Natalie still has that portrait of her dog on display at her home. Of course, in the 90s, Natalie was touring the world and bumping into stars at award shows and in green rooms. So I wanted to ask her about some of the people she met. Let's start with her worst celebrity experience.
I really embarrassed myself in front of a big name when I was in LA on a songwriting trip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge PJ Harvey fan and I was at the reception of the hotel and I looked to the left and she was standing right next to me and I got so embarrassed. I think I might have said, hi, my husband's a really big fan of yours.
Oh no!
Because I was too embarrassed to say that I was.
No.
But then I kind of had verbal diarrhea and didn't stop talking and... next thing you know, I'd invited her for a drink and even given her my room number. She probably thought I was trying to pick her up. And I walked back to my room and kind of just was so embarrassed. But that's probably the worst one.
Oh, Nat, look, we all want to be cool and composed when we meet our heroes, but it just never happens that way. So let's end on a happier note with Nat's best celebrity experience. And this one gives me major 90s FOMO.
My best celebrity encounter in the 90s would have to be meeting Bono at the Grammys the year that I was nominated and him inviting me to Madonna's after party.
What?
And hanging with him and all of his friends. I have to say, that goes down in history as one of the best nights of my life.
Oh, yeah. You would never forget that. You two and Madonna. That is a 90s party I would have loved to have been at. Thanks, Nat. Thanks for those stories. I love them. Now, you guys sent some absolutely lovely stories about meeting Minogues over the years, and it truly does make my day when someone tells me how much my music has meant to them. Kylie and I have both done a lot of meet and greets over the years where we get to have that one-on-one interaction. But I did get a story about meeting my sister that really touched me and I wanted to share it.
Hi, Danny. It's Natasha from Melbourne. So what had happened was back in 97, I was in the audience for Hey Hey It's Saturday knowing that Kylie was going to perform Some Kind of Bliss. And a few of us were invited to stay afterward for a meet and greet. However, I didn't get a chance to get a photograph taken with her because it was very overwhelming with all the people around her. I did go home, though, a little bit saddened that this will be my only chance to meet her and no photograph was taken. The next day, though, I was out at a cafe having lunch with my girlfriend who was leaving for London. I went to the ladies' room and as I was walking in, Miss Minogue was walking out. I couldn't help but just tell her how much I really enjoyed seeing her the night before and how I was really sad that I didn't get a photograph taken with her. She was super, super kind and sweet with me, because when I went back to my table, my girlfriend said, Kylie Minogue is trying to get your attention. So as I turned around to see what she was talking about, I had Kylie ask for me to go over to her table. I could not believe my luck. So I casually strolled over, really cool, calm and collected, and sat next to her where she had a chair prepared. And she said to me, "Do you have your camera with you?" I actually did have my camera with me. I had one photo left on my film, one chance to get this right. So as I sat next to her, I was so comfortable and felt at ease. We had a little bit of a chat and we took the one photo. It was the biggest buzz that I could have ever felt.
It was just meant to be. I love it when stuff like that happens. It's like the photo was meant to happen. And how's about that? The one last photo on the camera. Oh! I would be so nervous getting that back from the photo store. I've just loved hearing and sharing all these incredible stories about the lengths fans went to in the 90s. I love that dedication. Remember, the 90s goodness doesn't have to stop here. Just search the 90s podcast on the Listener app. Special thanks to the team behind this fantastic episode. Get it? Fantastic. Audio production was handled by Mike Santos. It was written and researched by Cameron Adams and produced by the lovely Georgie Page.
Listener.